some of you, you know, saw that this Shabbos we have privilege to have my father-in-law's brother, who was spent Shabbos with us, and it was his 80th birthday today, as we mentioned in the drasha, Chav Shvat. My father-in-law, by the time I was speaking, was already in another world, unbeknownst to us. We knew he was very, very sick, suffering miserably. And the Rabbanu Shlomim took him. It says in the Gemara that one is permitted to even to pray. And Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was suffering so badly. So they prayed that Hashem should take him rather than have him suffer so badly. This is, of course, a decision which the Rabbanu Shlomo makes. We, of course, are mekabel the din. My father-in-law lived a long and happy life. He turned 90 this past summer. And the family got together and put out an album which was entitled Tzadik Bemunoso Yichya. With a big tzaddi, for 90. And everyone from the family contributed poems and some pictures and some words. And in my most recent visit there, which was just a month ago, the first thing I did was to see the album. And I, as I'm thinking about it now, just is exactly 4 weeks ago tonight, think, yes, I was in Eretz Yisrael. It was Parshas Vayechi. Was that 5 weeks ago? Tonight, that I was in Malava Malka with my son Simcha at my in-laws' house, and when we finished the sumptuous meal, so my father-in-law asked us, "What should we sing?" We said, "So we'll sing." He asked us to sing Al Tira Avdi Yaakov. My father-in-law's name is Yaakov Aaron. And we sang, and the budget's a tune, and he sang with us he was weak, but he sang with us, and we benched with him a zoomin, and it was just a short time ago. Even one of the verses that we couldn't recall, he recalled it for us. And it was a beautiful and meaningful Malava Malka. That week, I stayed another week. He got sicker, and I ran with him to a private doctor. His back hurt. We thought it was a back problem. He had bad back problems. We thought it was exclusively an orthopedic problem. I ran with him to an orthopedist in Baca. And that was on Wednesday. That was that Wednesday, which was the following, just a month ago. And after I was about to take leave, he says, "He has to pay me." I paid the doctor. He has to pay me. He took money out of his pocket. How many shekels? I think it was that. 700 check, whatever it was. He insisted on paying me, and I brought him some money, insisted on writing me a check. The last thing our last interaction in person was him giving me a check with the money for a doctor's visit. He didn't want to be shulduk to anybody. Didn't want it. He was so meticulous. He didn't want to owe anybody anything. And I spoke to him once since then when my wife was in the hospital. She put him on the phone. It was just last week. And we had a very interesting conversation. It was last Thursday. I know exactly when it was, just 10 days ago. And I wished him a good Shabbos. It was come a Shabbos Shira then. Before that, I have an important engagement, he tells me. Before even that, I said, he thanked me so much that my wife was there. I said, "Zeta, the mitzvah is kibud av aim. What kind of question is this?" So he responded right away. "But reshus acherim aleha." We learned this in our series at the beginning of the year, that if a woman is married, her husband has priority. I thought Zayda was such a chayr, I don't think you have to worry. This is our conversation. It was clear, and everything was clear. Just last night, he gave a bracha to his son. And he benched his grandson. He said Krishma. He benched. He said Kiddush. Just last night. This morning, the breathing started to slow down. They told my brother-in-law, it's coming to an end. He sniffed in the middle of Shabbos. And what was this? He says, "Before Shabbos, you have an important engagement." But my wife was there last Thursday night. That's just 9 days ago, they made a 65th wedding anniversary. Yud Beis Shvat. 65th wedding anniversary. He was so sick in the hospital. He went to like a sunroom there, you know. And they're all, I saw pictures of it. All my children and grandchildren were there. And it was an incredible thing. I saw pictures of it. Surreal. Like a biblical experience. He's basically saying goodbye to his whole family. And my son Akiva had a baby and whispered in his ear. He knew the news. He whispered it into his, you know, he nodded. He grabbed his finger to wish him a mazel tov. I said the baby's name is Chana. Let's find that out. Some good news. And Chana is on the my daughter-in-law side. But also he asked me, what names are there in our family? Up, as far as you can go. So my wife took home from Israel a book of her grandfather, my father-in-law's father, and there he said his mother's name was Chana. We have one aunt that's her first name. No one even calls it that. They call it by a second name, Toby. So there's no one in the family. So I told Akiva the name is Chana. I found out from my mechutin that on the other side, the reader side, is also Chana. And the baby was named Chana after my father-in-law's paternal grandmother, literally, I assume, hours before his patir. So this is all... it's all happening in Shari Tzedek. It's all happening. They went to say goodbye to him as they took the baby. As they're leaving the hospital on Thursday, they went into the room and they said, Zayd opened his eyes. So, how much he knew. And they opened his eyes when they walked in. So he saw this new baby. He kept saying, where's the baby already? He kept saying, he was impatient for this baby. So many things that we've been speaking about in the Shirim over this whole series have come to fruition, honoring in-laws and honoring parents and interactions with parents and children, and so many of the things, and spouses, 65 years of being together, and they're sitting there together, the picture, and it's so happy and it's so sad at the same time. It's almost biblical in nature, just the events. So, of course, this shiur is dedicated to his memory, Rav Yaakov Aaron, Ben, Rav Avraham Eliezer, and...
You're okay to be here?
I'm okay. I was just with the Rebbetzin. The Rebbetzin was almost going to get on a plane right now, but the decision was taken. She'd get on the plane now, she'd miss everything. Impossible to get the Levi's tomorrow at 2 o'clock in Eretz Achayim, in Bet Shemesh. So if you know someone who wants to pay respects, please, it's time to get in touch with them. But she wouldn't land till 4, and she wouldn't get out till 5, and she'd just miss everything. She decided she's going to stay here. So there'll be Shiva in my house tomorrow. And there'll be Shiva even Monday morning, just for davening, and then she's going to get on a plane Monday. She'll leave here Monday morning, late morning, get on a plane, the first plane, and arrive 6:55 a.m. on Tuesday, so she'll be there for the rest of the Shiva with her family. So that's why it took me a few minutes to get all this. That's why I was a little late. I apologize. Tomorrow morning, I'm not sure what time. I have to figure that out yet. I still haven't figured it out, because we're going to try to Skype the Levi'ah in. In other words... You know what that means? The younger you are, the more chance you know what it is. I'm just trying to figure out. She wants to see it. So between my son, I got this call from my son. My son tried to call me in shul. He didn't want my wife to pick up the phone. So he tried me in shul, but no one picks up. So he called on the other line of the house. And my sister-in-law was here for Shabbos because they're all there. Every single, except for my wife, every single sibling is there. Because they all went running because they saw how sick he was. So they're all there. So, before I walked to the house, I said, let's make up the quick before anyone knew anything. Because I had my wife there, my uncle was there, also in Aninus. So we were quick Abdullah, and then we told him afterwards. So it just took a while till we kind of. I'm not sure what things be happening while I'm here, but I have Rishus to say this year. She said, you must say this year. Should be an Ilu Neshama for my father in law. And we should be privileged to have many, many simchas in our family and the community and all of Klal Yisrael. The topic. Which is today's shiur, and here I even made the copies, but I just didn't have a chance to make the multiple copies because I was going to do it, but just didn't have a chance. Is relationships between observant Jews and non-observant Jews a very complex and critical topic? And given today's world, it's unfortunately the realities in today's world that the observant Jews constitute a minority of Klal Yisrael. It's just the reality. We don't want to recognize that reality, but it is a reality. That's a reality. I mean, it's a sad reality, but it is a reality that the observant community is a minority within Klal Yisrael. It wasn't always that way. I mean, traditionally, you know, going back historically for all the generations, the observant communities constituted the majority. In many generations, an overwhelming majority, where non-observance was rare. In the way the European situation was, and even this is true of our Sephardic brothers, probably even more so, non-affiliation was not an option. You had to be affiliated with a community. In Europe, most of Europe that we know, of our ancestors came from, it's compulsory by the government. You had to belong somewhere. It's just valga zacharum. You had to belong, it wasn't like in America. America, do whatever you want. We're such Americans, we can't even imagine a different system. But we had to belong to a community. You could belong to a Christian community, you could belong to a Jewish community, and that's where the whole Gemeinde, this one, that one, they separated inside. We don't understand, this whole concept is so foreign to us because we're Americans. What's the difference? They're fighting so much with the government. Because that's how it was in those days. Then it was government connected. And therefore, the only choice for a Jew who didn't want to belong to his fundamentally Orthodox community was Chas Hashem Tishmad, to go and to become a Christian. And there were such cases, but there were few and far between. So I'm not discussing now the forced conversions that existed, you know, in Spain and other places where they were under the gun converted. But voluntary conversions, historically, it existed. We cannot sweep it under the rug. It existed, but it was certainly not a common phenomenon in a broad perspective. It existed. So therefore, the overwhelming majority of Avachenu B'nai Yisrael were observant. They kept Torah mitzvahs. Were they all Talmidei Chachamim, Gaonim, Tzadikim? No. We spoke about this a little bit last Motzei Shabbos. We were discussing off the derech, how you deal with children who unfortunately leave religious observance. But today's discussion, this evening's discussion, is not discussing children as such, although we'll see soon that the role of children compared to their parents does play a critical role. But the discussion is, how do you, as an Orthodox observant Jew, Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, how do you relate to individuals who are members of the Klal Yisrael, who are descendants of Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov? There's no question about their Jewishness. They come from Jewish blood, Jewish parentage, straight through to Har Sinai. But unfortunately, they're completely non-observant. Totally non-observant. They don't keep Shabbos. They don't keep Kashrus. You know, almost every Jew has some semblance, right? Something. And maybe they'll have something on Pesach, or maybe they'll have some kind of a Seder or other, or maybe they have a Bris Mila. We spoke about that last time as the two most commonly held on to rituals, something on Passover and then ritual circumcision. But beyond that, yeah, maybe they'll come to shul maybe 3 days a year. These would be the 3 days a year people. Remember those three, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. Okay, so some don't even come then. And some are down to 2 days. They have only 1 day Rosh Hashanah. Each to his own. But on a regular day in, day out basis, these individuals are simply not observing the halach. So how do we relate to them? What kind of status do they have? So if one looks in the original sources, one finds quite a harsh response to such individuals. And these people who are stray from the Torah, and they don't do any mitzvahs. So the Gemara takes a very hard line towards such individuals. We are taught that somebody who does not observe the Torah, some who denies the Torah. Unfortunately, today there's so many individuals who either deny God or deny the divinity of the Torah. Or they say the Torah has completely changed since then. Well, and these are all different variations. So these people, according to many poskim, they're beyond the pale. They're out. So too, someone who converts to a different religion, according to certain authorities, has a status that they call, say, dino kegoy. He's treated for certain halachic purposes like someone who's not Jewish. It's a very harsh phraseology. And it applies, according to many authorities, to an individual who is what we call Mechal Shabbos B'Farhesia, drives a car on the street on Shabbos. I mean, the sad fact, it pains me to say it, but we have to be realistic. The majority of Am Yisrael today is in this category. I mean, it hurts me so much to say these words, but the majority of our brothers and sisters worldwide don't keep Shabbos, and even in a public way they don't keep Shabbos. If they drive on Sunday, they're driving on Shabbos. You know, and they just do it. It's just a regular day to them, unfortunately. And according to the strict Shulchan Aruch says, "Mechal Shabbos b'Farhesia." Farhesia means he's not ashamed of anybody. Not ashamed. There's no one. He's not. He's desecrate the Shabbos in front of anybody. It's not like he's going to try to hide it from somebody. No, Shabbos doesn't mean anything to him. The Shulchan Aruch writes, It's going to be found in Yoredeya, at the beginning of Hilchos Shechita, one of whose Shechita is kosher or not kosher. So someone who is a mumu l'chal Shabbos with Farhesya, Dino Kegoy. What do you mean Dino Kegoy? That means if he slaughters an animal ritually, one may not eat from that Shechita. If a Goy slaughters an animal, that's certainly no good. This person is Jewish. He's as Jewish as you and me. This is a big mistake, which was unfortunately caused a lot of grief 8 years ago, 6 years ago. Who remembers when it was? The Agudas Rabbonim made a whole press conference. I think it was in Los Angeles somewhere. I don't know what they were doing in Los Angeles. They made a big press conference. What they were trying to say was that non-Orthodox Judaism is not legitimate Judaism. But what came out in the press, which is very often skewed, is that the rabbi, the Orthodox rabbis, got up and said, non-Orthodox Jews are not Jewish. You must remember that story. It was all over the papers in the LA Times, and it was a whole, they often get it wrong, either accidentally or sometimes even think maybe on purpose. Big headlines, non-Orthodox Jews are not Jewish. Now, I could guess one could even say that, well, Dino Kegoy, Dino Shulchan Aruch. No, it doesn't really mean that. Dino Kegoy means that if he's a ritual slaughterer, a shaychet, his shechita is no good. Doesn't mean Dino Kegoy. But how far do we extend that? It doesn't quite say. We'll have to see later on in discussing some of these details how far we go with this understanding. Okay. Is it a Torah halacha or is it a rabbinical halacha? As a matter of dispute. Some say it's min haTorah and some say it's only min haRabbanan. Fine. Now, why is Chilul Shabbos so serious? We know it's the most important Aveira, etc., etc., etc. Good. So now we come to what was supposed to be on the source that we're going to be giving out, which is the concept called Tinok Shenishpa. Tinok Shenishpa is a halachic construct, like most things. It's used as a phrase today, as everyone bandies it about. It comes from the Gemara. What does it mean? It's a full word. We said Tinok Shenishpa, literally a baby who's taken captive, but that's only a half a phrase. Who? By whom? Captive by whom? Who captured him? So the Gemara's expression of Tinok Shenishba Lebein HaGoyim. He was captured in his youth taken prisoner somehow by non-Jews. They brought him up as a non-Jew. So, what did he do wrong? He thinks he's not Jewish. He is an onus. What does the word onus mean? Coerced. He is coerced. He's not that someone's standing with a gun. He doesn't even know he's Jewish. He thinks he's not Jewish. You're going to fault him for not keeping Shabbos? He doesn't think he's Jewish. If he studied a little bit, he'd find out he's not allowed to keep Shabbos. Because a non-Jew is not even allowed to keep Shabbos. He thinks he's not Jewish. This is the classical construct which we know in our language as Tinok Shenishba. Okay. But what is new, which is found in the Rambam, which is not found in the Gemara itself, and I quote, Af al pi sheshama chakach shu Yehudi v'roh ha-Yehudim v'dosa. This is the Chiddush of the Rambam. That this poor baby was taken captive. That he was for 30 years, he thought he was not Jewish. And suddenly, somehow, somebody dies in the family, and there's this, and he suddenly wakes up. You know what? His mother's mother was Jewish. He grew up his whole life in the church. And he hears that in the Jewish religion, you follow matrilineal descent. So he really is Jewish according to the Jewish religion. Meanwhile, he's established in his career. And suddenly someone tells him he's Jewish. What happened to Albright, the Secretary of State? Something similar to this? Isn't that correct? I don't know exactly what stage in her life somebody told her that...
She was Secretary of State.
That's when it happened? She found it out?
Uh-huh.
Somewhere or other. It was a Holocaust situation. That these things abound. So so the Rambam says it's impossible to expect someone... It's impossible to expect someone who lived an entire life as a non-Jew to suddenly do a 180. It's not impossible, but if the person does not have the spiritual fortitude to do so, so then the Rambam says you cannot consider that person culpable and make him offer a korban, a ritual offering, every time he desecrates the Shabbat. It's not... He's an onus. It's the compulsion of an entire upbringing and a lifestyle for so many years, decades, that it cannot condemn him if he just can't just turn on a dime and suddenly become an observant Jew. He can't. So he's therefore exempt, according to the Rambam, from being a korb. Okay. So the big question, of course, becomes somebody who is sinning because, not that he was captured by Goyim, he was captured, he was brought up, we should say, in an environment of non-observance. Can he be categorized as a Tinok Shenishba, as someone who was in effect captured? Let's say he grew up in Eretz Yisrael in a non-observant kibbutz. Or take another example. He was brought up in the Soviet Union, in the bad days, when he knew very well how Jewish he was. On his passport it said, Jid, whatever they said on the passport, and he suffered plenty for being a Jew, but there was no observance. They were under pain of death in the Stalinist era, right? So then he knows he's Jewish, but and then later on, so when he's under Stalin, he certainly can't fault him. But he goes to Israel years later, a decade of the United States, plenty of people living in Brooklyn, or even in Riverdale or down the hill. There are plenty of people. They were brought up in Stalinist or post-Stalinist Russia, but they knew they were Jewish. They weren't captured by the Goyim. What kind of halachic status does that have? This is very, very, very serious question. Serious question. Now, so in order to understand what kind of status this individual has, we have to look into a few different places. And again, I apologize that you don't have the sources in front of you. I would have preferred that you had some of them in as a handout, but again, due to events, I was just unable to do so. One of the main sources over here is a Rambam. The Rambam. The Rambam is found in Hilchos Mamrim. Hilchos Mamrim is a law of those who rebel. Mamrim is someone who rebels. And included in that discussion of the Rambam are individuals who rebel against the halacha. You know about a Zokei Mamre. That's a Torah scholar who rebels against the majority rule of the great Sanhedrin. But the Rambam discusses in the laws of Mamrim, and I'm going to read it to you. An individual who was kofer b'torah shebal peh, he denies the validity of the oral tradition, which you spoke about in Shalosh Shudos, but lent the oral tradition. Moridin oso. What does that mean? In the olden days, they would take him and put him down into a pit. This sounds quite fundamentalist. It is. It is. And as we shall see soon, the reason for this was because the fear was if you would allow him to thrive, he might take others with him. The only way to maintain our religion intact was to, as the Torah puts it, ubi'arta ara mikirbecha. You will excise the evil from within your midst. You know, our Torah believes in capital punishment. And if a person desecrates the Shabbos, we just spoke about the Shalosh Shudos, but Koshish ate Sibiyom HaShabbos, he was put to death by stoning. It sounds, in America, it sounds fundamentalist, I guess to some extent it is. But we have no apologies to make for the Kodesh Baruch Hu. If he decided that this is the way it has to be, we are not here to criticize or to question.
But that's not capital punishment.
What does that mean?
I mean, it was done in a way so that they didn't do anything, because really, there was no way for them to give him the capital punishment.
I understand. Moridim is not quite the same as capital punishment. But I'm thinking I'm just pointing out the fact that we can either directly or indirectly cause the death of a human being is something which is hard for us to understand in 2009. But let me read you the Rambam that's relevant.
We know we
can
do that.
Oh, slowly. These individuals who rebelled against the Torah, they were brought up in a home which believed in Torah Shabbat Peh, and they themselves rebelled. What about their children? Ubnei b'neihem, even more so their grandchildren. Shehidichu osam avosa v'noldu b'minus v'gidlu osam olav. They brought up their children in this atmosphere of denial. Harehein kitinog shenishba lebein hagoyim v'gidluhu hagoyim aldosam shahu onus. Says the Rambam, doesn't only mean a person who was literally kidnapped and taken to amongst the non-Jews, but if he's brought up in an anti-Torah atmosphere, when he is taught that that the Torah is not true, or things of this nature. So then this individual, because he is what we call it, is he's like a Tinek Shinishal Debein Agoyim. He wasn't. He's been brought up by Jewish parents. They tell him he's Jewish, but they say the Torah is false. The Torah wasn't given by God. The Torah is lapsed. It's whatever they say. But the Torah Shebichsav is true. The Torah Shebapeh is not true. And we know about those people who called it Stukim in the old years. So these, according to the Rambam, those individuals themselves who rebel against the authority of the Torah are put down into a pit. But their children and grandchildren who were brought up incorrectly are Tinok Shenishba. That's Chiddush number one. Chiddush number two. V'af al pi sheshoma hakach shu Yehudi v'ro'a Yehudin v'dosam. Later on he discovers that he's Jewish and he knows what their religion is all about and he knows what the proper Torah religion is. Harehu ka'onus sherei gidluhu al ta'usam. Kach elu ha'ochusim b'dachi avosam shato. Just as if it's a literal case of a baby that's kidnapped in his youth and brought up in the church, and at age 50 he finds out that he's Jewish, he's considered a tinok shenishba, and you would not punish him, and presumably according to the Rambam, he would not have to bring a korban. If he became a baal tshuva later on, he would not have to bring a korban for every Shabbos that he desecrated earlier on, even after he discovered his Judaism. So too, these individuals were never kidnapped by goyim. They grew up in their father's and grandfather's home, but they taught them that the Torah is never happened, or it lapsed, or the interpretations are wrong. Similarly, they are exempt from bringing a korban, that's what Tinok Shenishba means. But moreover, from our perspective, you cannot punish them. Of course, you cannot punish them with your own hands, nor can you lower them into a pit, which means that they're going to, quote, die on their own. Lefichach, says the Rambam, Roy lahachzira b'tshuva. We should do our best to bring them back, to make them into Baalei Tshuva. And to bring them, pull them back in ways of peace. Until they come back to the strength of Torah. The last four words are different texts. What does that mean? And you shouldn't be quick to kill them. What does it mean? And you should kill them slowly? What does that mean? It's a big fight. What did the Rambam mean over here? What did he mean? If we have a chance, we'll get to it tonight. If not, maybe perhaps next Monday Shabbos. On this basis, the Chazon Ish paskened that the Chilonim of nowadays, right, the Chilonim of nowadays, the Michal Shabbos Befarhesia nowadays, has a totally different status. He's given a status of what we call a Tinok Shenishba. A Tinok Shenishba. Now, this means that we have to have as far as Moridim is concerned, that's what the original source is. How does it affect other areas? Other areas. That's what we have to analyze. I think everybody agrees we're not going to do Moridim. But the truth is, it's not only because these people have a dinner Tinok Shenishba. The same author, Chazon Ish, said Moridim no longer applies to anybody today. The person who was brought up in a totally observant milieu, and he rebelled against the whole Torah, we would still not apply Moridim today. Why? That's another paragraph in the Chazon Ish, where the Chazon Ish explains that the whole concept of Moridim only applied yesteryear, where we had a preponderance of mitzvah observance. And this one person who steps out threatens to bring down the whole community with him. We want to preserve the integrity, the spiritual integrity of the community. Therefore, we apply the principle of Moridim. But today, when the majority of the people are not observant, any attempt to do Moridim would be viewed as thuggery. Maase alimus, thuggery. And would be completely counterproductive. And therefore, the Moridim, it's just a theoretical point of our discussion. I'm using it because that's what the Rambam is speaking. The Rambam, in his day, there was such a thing as Moridim, to get that impression. But not today. Not in 2009. Chazon Ish wrote what he wrote probably 100 years ago. Even then, it didn't apply because the majority already then were non-observant. And Moridim itself is something which is in the past. It does not exist anymore. However, the question becomes, well, what does that mean? Does that mean that the average Chiloni, secular Jew today, is a Tinok Shenishba for all purposes? Or did he only say it with respect to the halachas of Moridim, because that's the context in which this is found. This is a matter of dispute as to how what the Chazon Ish himself held in this regard. It's important to understand that these rules and regulations are very, very important. Let's assume that an individual, a typical non-observant Jew today, how do we relate to him? All right, we're not going to be, no one's discussing about reading. That's just a theoretical point of departure. How do we relate in practical stuff, the mitzvah of Gemilas Chasodim and the mitzvah of Lachyoso, right? V'chei Achicha Imoch. What about an individual who is, we call a quote-unquote Tinoch Shinish. Let's take a classical Tinoch Shinish. Leave out today's secular Jew. The classical Tinoch Shinishba. He was we know he's Jewish. He himself doesn't even know he's Jewish, for argument's sake. He doesn't even know it. So what's the halacha? So it starts with a din in Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya in Hilchus Tzedakah. It's in Reish Nun Aleph. There's a mitzvah of tzedakah to give charity, and it's also a din lo samar adam reyecha, not to say an adibay if your brother is suffering. It says the Yireim, it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, Eino noeg ela b'achicha b'mitzvos. The word achicha we find often in Chazal is limited to achicha b'mitzvos. Someone who's not with you, you're not your brother, in the observance of mitzvos, perhaps forfeits his status of achicha. This is what the Yireim says. I'll read you the language that's quoted over here. Kevin sha'ava b'meizet yotz michlala achva, the achva b'mitzvos b'ina. Remarkable. Where'd he get it from? A Gemara in Makis Davchav Gimel, Amud Aleph. Kevin Shekibel as Dino, Harehu Achicha, V'nikla Achicha Le'enecha. A pasuk which is referring to someone who gets what? Malkus. So the Gemara's expression is, Kevin Shekibel as Dino, Harehu Achicha. What's the implication? That before he received his din, and today no one gets any din, he's not considered to be Achicha. So someone who is a Chalila V'chas in the category of what we call a Rasha. No. But there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, L'chol Avedas Achicha. So the Yireim says, no, does not apply to other areas. Only by it comes to Aveda. Why? Because the Aveda is his. Since the Aveda is his, it belongs to him. So even though he's not really Achicha, you have to give it back anyway. That's a little bit of a hard line to just Talmudic, as we'd say. It says L'chol Avedas Achicha. It's not as if it's you do Hashabbat Aveda to a non-ach. Yet the Gemara seems to say, at least in certain cases, that someone who's not observing the mitzvahs is in the category of Achicha. Says the Yireim, that's only for Hashabbat Aveda, because the Aveda is his. Someone had a question? No. Okay. So this is what he says. Now, according to this, it seems that even though a tinok shenishba, it's not his fault that he's not performing the mitzvahs. It's completely not his fault. We use the word onus. The Rambam used the word. It's an onus. It's not his fault. There's an expression which the Yerushalmi has, which is used by poskim in a different context. Unsa lav kimanda ovid, which means that someone who is prevented from doing something, we cannot say it as if he did it. If someone did something wrong and he was under compulsion, the halacha considers it as if he didn't do it. Someone holds a gun and says, eat pork, and I ate pork, as if I didn't eat pork, because I ate it under the gun. But let's say someone says, here's a gun, don't put on tefillin. So we can't say, it's as if I put on tefillin. I just didn't put on tefillin. It's a fact. You can't make a nothing into a something. You can make a something into a nothing. That's what the Mefarshim suggests. So on this basis, he's quoting on the bottom, that even though he's an onus, but what can you do? He doesn't perform the mitzvahs. We're not exactly sure what the Yireim means. Do we follow him? Not so simple. He writes on the bottom, we don't follow the Yireim. La'alocha, dino ki yisrael l'chol davar. We're talking what we call a mumar l'tayavon. He's just doing it for his own lusts. We follow in Shulchan Aruch. It's a mitzvah to save his life. So we paskin la'alocha, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you do not require achicha b'mitzvahs. You have to save someone, even if he's not achicha b'mitzvahs. Now, the question becomes, How far do we go with this? So he claims over here that perhaps, I'm only mentioning this, that perhaps, this does not extend to somebody who was Mechalel Shabbos Lefarhesia. That's a different category. We don't really understand why that should be so. Why that should be so? There are those who claim that if someone is Mechalel Shabbos Lefarhesia, because it's good for his, for making money, Rav Moshe writes, in two different shuvas, someone's Mechal Shabbos to make a parnasa, he's not a kofer. And the Binyan Siyan in the world famous tshuva, Chelik Beis Simon Chav Gimel, he's the first one. It was written in the beginning of the 19th century, even then already, there were many, many people in Germany who were desecrating the Shabbos. And he writes the famous line, Mechal Shabbos Bizmanenu, I don't know what to do with them, because they're doing it out of, they don't know any better, Tinuk Shenishba. But one of the reasons that he gave was that they're doing it for their money, to Parnosa. I just had the following question, just someone asked me this question this week, within the last few days. I'm just trying to get in my head who it is right now. I'm a little bit confused. Somebody asked me the following question. He said that he came from a certain community, and almost all the people there were Mechal Shabbos. Why? Because they had no bread on the table. The Mechal Shabbos, because they had no bread on the table. They literally had nothing to eat. But, he said, my grandfather was the only one in the group that he did was not Mechal Shabbos. He'd get fired every week on Friday, and he'd look for a job the next Sunday or Monday, and if he got it, not, even though, did he do the right thing? This person asked me. Maybe my grandfather did the wrong thing. People were starving. So Pikuach Nefesh, we know, is Docha Shabbos. So I told this person, your grandfather did the right thing. And nobody died, right? And they were able to somehow survive. And that was, I'm not here to judge other people. I'm not here. But he did the right thing. Rav Moshe suggests that maybe if someone was Mechalel Shabbos to make a living, perhaps, not to make a fortune, but just to be able to put bread on the table, perhaps he would be in a category in which we should say that he is not considered to be worse than any other Mumar Le'Teyavim. Now,
he's a conservative Jew, and his rabbi said you can drive to Shul.
Right, he's following the rabbi. He doesn't know any better. Exactly. He's Tinuk Shenishva Leben, a reform or conservative, where they say driving on Shabbos is a mitzvah. Now, the question will be, does the conservative rabbi say it's driving to Shabbos is mutter to come to Shul, or is he permitted to go to the mall?
To come to Shul.
And this guy, what if he goes to the mall afterwards? Ah, that's already, you know, he's not even following the conservative rabbi. So that, I don't know where he's going to stand as far as that is concerned. So these are all critical questions. So we don't follow the Urayim. We do, if someone is sinning for the purpose of his desires, we have to save his life. We have to, where he's considered to be in the category of Achicha. That's a fact. So that's a fact. Now what about the following situation? Today's, what he calls Chiloni. Unfortunately, they keep their Mechal Shabbos publicly. But the question becomes, they are considered to be individuals who are not keeping the Torah. Right? Some of them deny Torah Shabbosav, some deny Torah Shabbapeh, or deny one of the 13 principles of faith. So, what exactly do we do with them? Here we get into the page which I was going to give to everybody. It's, for those who want to look, let me just show what I have here. It's a sefer called Bina Vadas. It's a fairly new sefer. It's entitled Hilchos Mechal Le Shabbos Bizmanenu, written by a man named Rabbi Menachem Adler, and it came out Tovshin Samaches, a brand new sefer with the scholars Rabbi Zuriel Auerbach and Mordechai Auerbach, two Rabbi Shlomo Zalman's sons, and Rabbi Kupshitz from Bet Shemesh, from Nachman Menucha, very big Talmud Chacham. He has many other gedolim who he's quoting here in the sefer. So he writes Lemaisa. This is what you would, until now you wouldn't have had in front of you anyway. So don't feel bad. Here's what you, from now on, you would have had in front of you. Lemaisa Hachilorim Metsuyim Bizmanenu. Even though they have kilkulim, etc., etc., mikaven shemigil kotlan ischan chulios mechal leshabbos befaresia amun kol haTorah, nechleku haachronim begidram. It's one of these beautiful sfarim that we have. Almost the answer is almost always it's a machlokes. It's a dispute among the halachists. What's our attitude? And he tells you, rabim heimasovrim sheein dinam shel elu beretz Yisrael ketinok shenishba. Not They do not confer upon him the status of a Tinok Shenishba. And why? Because they know what's going on. They know that they're Jewish. And even the Rambam only said you should not put them into a pit, but perhaps they have a status of a lower status of a quote kigoy for other areas. And we say we have to pull them back on the grounds that when they discover the truth, they're going to return. This does not apply, he suggests, to a group that are mezalzel b'chachmei hador, unfortunately. But he does say, misoratiyim, who are equally non-observant, they're mechalel Shabbos b'faresya, but they have greater respect for the Torah and lomdeha, these individuals have a greater chance of becoming chozer b'tshuva. In one of his places, he says, it's not over here, that this is a largely exists in the Sephardic community, where there are many more Mesoratiyim, they're traditional. They may drive on Shabbos, but they have connections to their Chacham and to their Mesorah, etc., etc. Unfortunately, the Ashkenazi community, perhaps because of the deviationist movements, there were never deviationist movements amongst the Sephardim. There was only an Orthodox Shul. Your relationship to it and to its Chacham and to its observance depended on who you were. But there was no, but because it was only that, they had good feelings, you know. If they had anything to do with a shul, it was an Orthodox shul. So therefore, they maintained some greater connection to the authentic Mesorah. So he says these individuals, perhaps this particular point would not apply to them. But in Ashkenazim, unfortunately, so many of them, again, not their fault at all, because they have such disregard for the Torah and its expositors, the chance of bringing them back with tshuva are somewhat diminished. Now, he claims that the individuals who are included in this category of today's poskim, who do not confer on a nomadic basis the Tinek Shenishba status to today's secular Jews, include Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Shlomo Zalman, Rav Yoshev, and Rav Vosner. This is what he says. These are four great rabbis.
What's their
status? Like the Mumer of old, whatever status that had. Mechal Shalas Peresia had his status, etc., etc. But they disagree and say, no, they have a status of Tinuk Shenishba. Who said so? The Chazanish.
Can you count them for a minute?
Oh, hold on. We're trying to get there. Chazanish. And he quotes from Chaim Kanievsky, today's secular Jews, the Chazanish said it, Tinuk Shenishba. And I'm just quoting over here what it says. Chutz mi Ben Gurion. The Chazanish met with Ben Gurion, the famous meeting he had with him. Ben Gurion, what do you mean? Ben Gurion grew up in a somewhat traditional environment, and he threw it all away. He didn't mean Ben. He meant the people like that. But the truth is, as the years go by, you know, now the Chazanish already nifter 55 years ago. As the years go by, the Ben Gurions are fewer and fewer and fewer, and the greater and greater majority of the non-observant community today, as the years go by, are individuals who were not brought up in Orthodox homes. That's a reality. I'm not saying they're the totality. It's a strong majority. Now, the in another place, some quotes from Reb Chaim Kanievsky, it's a suffix. We're not exactly sure what status they have. Tinek Shenishba or not Tinek Shenishba. And they discovered some letter of the Chazanish. Rav Yoshev discovered it. They wanted to prove from there that he didn't say it as a definitive fact, but only as a, you know, we're not sure, so play it safe on both ends kind of a fact, which is different than a totally different system that we had heard originally in the name of the Chazanish. What's the status? Shchitasa muteres. His shchita is kosher. Assuming he shechted properly. Why? This is what he says. He's becheskas. We can make a presumption. If enough kiruv is done, he will come back. And we must mention. Okay, and we must mention today the late Rav Noach Weinberg, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. I mentioned last week at Shal Shudas, but it's we must mention him again. A man who believed this with every fiber of his body, that he will perform the proper kiruv, everyone will come back. People thought he was a meshugana. He's crazy. What's he doing? and he brought back him and those who he empowered, thousands upon thousands of individuals to tshuva. There's no question about it. It's a fact. Facts on the ground. People in this room, many people in this room, either were affected by him or those who were affected by him, and so many others throughout the entire world. So this demonstrates the Chazon Ish is correct. If you can do the right kiruv aspect, it works. It works. So the question was, there's a fight in the early Achronim about the Tzdukim in their time. The question was, how much did they know? And did they really understand? And they still pushed it away? Did we give them enough Yediyah? Did we do enough Kiruv? Uve emes is Chazon Ish. Tzorech lodon al kol ish ve'ish bifrat. You have to discuss each and every individual. And therefore, if his father was already not observant, he's dino ki Yisrael l'chol davar. He's considered Jewish for everything. Now, we don't say he's considered treated like a goy. And you have to learn carefully if he's considered amazed or not amazed. So Chazon Ish is quite clear that even today, it seems that he has the status of a tinok shenishba. So we're left with an unanswered question, because it's a machlokes gedolei haposkim, what is his status? So he writes over here, and I'll end with this. Ulinyan halacha. Mikevon she'ein banu koach la'achir b'machlok osel. The author, Rabbi Adler, I'm sure it's a big time of Chacham, he's going to stick his neck between the Chazon Ish and Rabbi Yoshev or somebody like that. That's suicide. So he's just going to, I don't know how to answer this question. I don't know who's right. V'gam ein kol ha'inyonim shavim. And it could be that one person is this way, one person is that way. He's a teenage shnish, but he's not. And you don't know the exact definition, in fact, of shir yudiyas kol echad v'yechad, an expression which the Chazon Ish used. We don't know. Nowadays, therefore, when it comes to a din d'oraisa, he claims we have to treat him as a mechal shabbos b'farhesya, with all the privileges that achicha are entitled to. You cannot say I'm not going to give him tzedakah. A chutzpah. Maybe he is achicha, so you have to give him tzedakah. If he's sick, you have to visit him. If you have to save his life, you have to save his life. Yeah, you have to give an Eitzah Tova. All these good things. As far as the Doraisas are concerned. Sfeika Doraisa L'chumra. This is the Psak of the Chofetz Chaim. Of course, the Chofetz Chaim is the same thing. However, when it comes to a Kula, to a leniency, he's fearful to go L'Kula, at least when it comes to a Doraisa. So you asked me a question about a Minyan. So, again, I reserve the right to change my mind before next Motzei Shabbos. But off the cuff, a minion is a derabbanon. There's no minion, except with Parsha Zohar, maybe. A minion is a derabbanon. When it comes to derabbanon, we're not sure if he's a tino shenishba or not. If he is a tino shenishba, he would count. And if he wouldn't, he would not count. Sveika derabbanon lekula. That's what emerges. You say, for the rites, you have to be machmer. Yes?
Conservative rabbi and a reformed rabbi. Are they tino shenishba or are they...
Absolutely tino shenishba. Most of them. Because today, the graduates of the reform and conservative stands of today, 2009, they did not come from Orthodox homes. They were never brought up with anything. They don't know anything.
So then what about someone who did grow up Orthodox, who knew grew up Orthodox as far as the minion is concerned?
That's a problem. Because he's not you can't use the word Tinnish to describe him. So then you have to go back to the original halachas. If it's a mumul teyavon, that's one thing. But Michal Shabbos Farhesias has different status. So yeah, it's not so simple, yes?
Is that overweight, like to embarrass a person in public? I'm sure, where do you have that?
Embarrassing a person in public is a very serious matter. A very, very serious matter. We should try our very best not to embarrass somebody in public. Nonetheless, we have the integrity of the halacha we have to worry about. So therefore, you know, I'll give you an example. A balkari makes a mistake. You scream out in the back, ooh!
It's terrible.
We have a balkari, and it's so embarrassing. Made a mistake. And there are some poskim who say that we should not correct them. Just let it go. We should never correct them. That's the Malkor would love that. Never correct the Malkor. He says, who, he, whatever, just let him go right on. See what I'm saying? But I mean, why? Because they're afraid of embarrassing them. We don't follow that halacha. We say, you know, we try very hard not to embarrass anybody, but we have an integrity of the halacha. You have to have a proper kriyas haTorah. If the Malkor says this way instead of that way, we have to go out and you have to correct him. It's a balance. It's always such a difficult balance. You're right, it's a very difficult balance not to embarrass somebody, right? We had with the whole thing, some of you saw about the ethicist we had a few years ago, who said that if the woman extended her hand and the agent, the real estate agent, didn't want to shake her hand, so she ethicist said you have to undo the whole contract, it's unethical behavior. By the way, going back from a contract, that's not unethical, right? It was a signed contract, which they went back from. But that's not unethical. But because he was someone else, he wouldn't shake a hand. Now, I might think it's mutter to shake a hand. I think I've said it to you in certain circumstances. But if he has a different approach, she's embarrassed. She stuck out her hand. You know, in certain circumstances, they're coming to kiss you. Yeah? She will say, well, I'm embarrassed. So what can I do? It's an embarrassing situation. We have the integrity of the halacha that we are required to maintain. So your point is very well taken. Very well taken. I think we should do Kiruv. Everybody should do Kiruv.
But I'm saying if the person's coming for the minion.
Okay. Correct. But according to the psak I just gave, you're going to have a week to back out. But the psak I just gave is that you may include a Tinok Shenishba, which is the vast majority of these individuals who are not from today, in a minion. So you're not going to be causing him any embarrassment. And the person who grew up from and rebelled, he's not surprised that he gets a little bit because when he grew up, they got worse. They got worse.
There was an article about that too.
Right, they had that article. The fellow who graduated and then his yeshiva took
Maimonides. That's right.
Yeah. And he was horrified.
He was mostly horrified about it. What, didn't he understand?
He couldn't understand.
Well, he may believe he didn't understand. So we have certain principles. You know what I'm talking about. This last year was in the New York Times. An honor student in Maimonides School in Boston married a non-Jewish woman, no pretense of conversion, and they didn't. He claimed they chopped them off the picture. They claimed it was not, and it wasn't true at all. They chopped off 10 kids. They just didn't have enough room. But there was all of the times back and forth. They embarrassed him. You know, he should have had enough understanding there to realize that this might happen. So he didn't. He was trapped. Maybe it's one of those in your faces. And I want to push the envelope to show you I'm coming with my non-Jewish wife and do me something. So he did him something. Then he's suddenly horrified. You know, so you have to be careful in these kinds of circumstances. But again, I'm not here to embarrass anybody. I believe in maintaining human dignity. But you also have to maintain the integrity of the halacha. And it's a balance. Yes, Ronnie?
The more practical comparison to the shochet.
Right.
Because I think that it's probably true that there aren't that many of those around the world. Is the individual housewife who is a relative or a friend who knows what kashrus is, but isn't necessarily, the family isn't, let's call it Shomer Shabbos.
Here's the answer to your question. The case in which you have the theoretical non-observant shochet or shechted, there was a mashkiach watching him from the beginning to the end, made sure he did a perfect job. He has very good hands. The problem that you're describing, this woman's not doing any shechita. She's just going to a store and buying pre-packaged foods. It's not a question of what she's doing. It's a question of trustworthiness. It's a totally different question. It may have a different answer. It's a different question. Yes?
I don't know if anyone reads the Jewish Week, but about a week ago, this Reform rabbi wrote that we should exclude Bernie Madoff. Now, I mean, I guess this is theoretical. I don't know how many of us are going to have the chance to meet him. But, you know, I mean, is that the type of thing we're talking about? What is, you know, somebody like him, certainly he was around enough Orthodox Jews, you know,
I don't want to speak about any individual whom I don't know anything about.
Neither. Okay,
I can't say I don't know his background. He is not an Orthodox Jew, that I can tell you. It's not. It's easy to take pot shots at people who are.
Pork with
Fahesh.
I mean,
okay, I didn't know that. I'm sorry to hear that.
Is it legitimate to say we should put such a person in Chayav?
Well, he you have maybe the coming together of the far extremes. On the left, they want to put him in chayim for his business practices. On the right, because he's eating pork. But I don't want to get. But I don't want to get involved in it.
There was no problem with being misdiving from Tuvinian because he never came. He never had that.
Okay, I don't feel it's right to take pot shots at people. I'm not going to say anything to that. Yes.
Back on the concept of amcha, I want to understand when you started from the beginning. Is there a time when I didn't understand the whole shiur that in the beginning we're looking at a fellow Jew and saying he's not amcha, so therefore.
There is a concept called achicha, but achicha means according to Chazal, achicha b'mitzvos. It has a source in Chazal. But you know what? I don't want to encroach on the other events that are taking place. We'll stop here. Believe that. And next week, can we meet a quarter to? Because we need a little extra time. So 7:45 in Mitzvah Shem next week. I have to talk to you about a soundbite. Same topic. Yeah, I'm not.